Maybe Brooklyn. I'm starting to think this isn't a very nice song.
My name is Marina.
Welcome.
I am a mother of three.
To the Ed Shep Radio Experiment.
I've lost 100 pounds.
Today our theme is...
And I am a foodaholic.
Fat.
My name is Marina. I've lost 100 pounds. And I am a foodaholic.
Your butt is wide, well mine is too. Just watch your mouth, or I'll sit on you. The word is out, better treat me right. Cause I'm the king of cellulite. Ham on whole wheat. Alright.
You know I'm fat, fat, I'm fat. You know it, you know. I'm a shadow weight for 42 pounds. Let me tell you once again, who's fat?
My name is Marina, and I am a foodaholic.
Lose weight.
I'm too fat to fit in a car. Too fat to go in a bar. Way too fat by far, honey. I can't go in no... Just too fat. Oh well, let me go in there and eat some. All this made me hungry. Bye, honey. Tell your mama I love her. All right,
guys.
This is Bill Cosby coming at you with music and fun. If you're not careful, you get around something you go done.
So when you gained all that weight, it was mainly because the diet screwed up your metabolism?
Yes, it's too bad. All of that weight I gained, I could have been gaining it with someone who would have appreciated it. Unfortunately, you can't go back. I can't just be 175 pounds again and enjoy putting the weight on. My current weight, of which only about 15 pounds was put on in any fun manner, is about 420. That was done on three separate occasions. Once on a photo shoot and video shoot where I was eating and they were filming, and two other times in private with people. It's not like this is a lifestyle where I'm able to do this very often. Especially at my current weight. If I were to find my life partner, I realize that my mobility is an issue. If they wanted me to maintain my mobility, which is something that I would ultimately want, I may only have about 80 pounds that I can put on. I wouldn't want to put it on casually. I'm sort of saving myself for the right person. It's reality versus fantasy. In my fantasy, I would love to be the fattest woman on earth, and the mobility isn't an issue. In reality, there are things that I like to do that involve getting out of bed. There are other problems that come with the size too, like skinfold rashes. You'd have to be with someone that's willing to care for you 24 hours a day, and those people don't really exist. I've been looking for 6 years and I haven't found anyone who really wanted to take me to immobility. They might fantasize about it, but they don't really want to do it.
Tell me about the videos you've made.
The first video was made in 1993 for Bellybusters, the pro weight gain newsletter. It was done in black and white, and it's just called Betsy. They put out a 4-page photo series of me, plus a 24-page newsletter of weight gain fantasies and stuff like that. They were out of San Francisco, and unfortunately, they folded this year. In that video, I mostly ate. I ate a large coconut cake and several quarts of half and half, which is a favorite of mine. I actually prefer cream for that purpose because it has more calories. It's not as filling, but it has more calories for the same amount of liquid. Solid food weighs me down and makes me feel bad. Men are always trying to send me gift certificates for cookies and donuts and ice cream, and I actually prefer prime rib and potatoes. It seems like most of the feeders are into feeding their women sweets. Men send me big boxes of candy from all around the world. I like them, but I can't eat them the way they'd like me to. I can't sit there for an hour and just eat candy nonstop, the way I could eat a big steak with béarnaise sauce. I can eat several of those.
How did the fantasies start?
They really started when I was very small. I used to envision myself getting larger. It's not unusual for feeders and feedees to have begun thinking these things as children. In fact, most of us have seen an old cartoon called Pigs is Pigs. It's a Merry Melodies cartoon from the 1960s, which showed this little pig getting strapped down in a chair by a mad scientist and being force-fed by a machine and growing fatter and fatter. We feedies all remember this cartoon and the impact it had on us and how we wanted to be strapped down and have that done to us. The feeders, too, remember that was the first time they had a glimpse that someone else had thought of strapping someone down in a chair and making them grow fat.
With the pig in the cartoon, wasn't he fattening the pig up so that he could eat it?
No, actually he wasn't. There's no cannibalism in it. At the end of the cartoon, he lets the piggy go, and the piggy has to waddle out the door. The waddling of this enormous piggy. He's just about to leave, and he sees that there's this other piece of pie on the table, and he eats it, and he explodes. Then he wakes up and it was a nightmare. That isn't the ending I would have picked for it. I would guarantee you that whoever the animator was, he was a feeder or a feedie. One of the two. Probably a feeder.
What day-to-day problems do you have that people might not think about?
I have to have a very big car and usually have to have the seat moved back several inches. It costs about $300 extra. I can barely sit in theater seats and they dig into my sides. Many of my friends can't fit at all. I can't fit in anything except first-class airline seats. This makes it incredibly expensive to travel anywhere. I can only use public restrooms that have handicap stalls. Not being able to find clothes in my size that aren't custom-made is becoming a real problem. I'm now at the biggest size that the catalogs make, 58-60. If I get any larger, there will be nowhere to buy panties or any other clothing. Chairs in doctor's offices and various public places usually have arms on them, which make for a very tight squeeze. They should always provide a few armless chairs. I can't fit in the standard size wheelchair. At airports and other places, there are none available to take me to the gate. Some airports might have one extra wide wheelchair, but that's a rarity. They need more of those available everywhere. I could go on and on about these kinds of issues where fat people are just left out of the manufacturer's or planner's universe. They just pretend we don't exist, and that way they don't have to provide for us. After all, too many of the brainwashed in the U.S., we don't deserve a place to sit or the things a thin person is entitled to. We got fat, the biggest sin in America, so we don't have any rights any longer. They must have amended the Constitution when we weren't looking.
I like the idea that this is a form of body modification, like tattooing and piercing. That lets people know that this is something people might choose to do to their own bodies. They're not victims or even criminals, but rather conscious people who are making a decision.
One of my favorite buttons that I've seen says, "How dare you presume I'd rather be thin?" And everyone does presume that I'd rather be thin. People place blame on us. You should feel guilty about this. If you just didn't eat, you wouldn't be this way. Whereas if they just put thin people on diets for even 2 weeks, they can't stay on them. It's just impossible to expect people to stay on a really restricted diet their entire life, which is what you'd have to do to stay in a size your body doesn't think you should be. Larger. Thank you.
And your mom is so fat, when she goes to the movie, she sits next to everyone.
I like big butts, and I cannot lie. But baby got back.
Researchers say women with rounder rumps aren't getting the medication they need because standard-sized needles are no longer long enough to cut through the cushion. Painful but true. In order to be most effective, drugs like painkillers and vaccines must be injected into muscle, where far more blood vessels are found. But when doctors in Ireland administered shots, which each included an air bubble, into 25 women, a CT scan revealed the bubble, and thus the meds, only reached the buttock muscle in 2 of them. The other 23 faced the potential of infection and irritation. Bummer. The larger problem behind all this? Obesity.
Baby got back. Yeah, baby. When it comes to females, Cosmo ain't got nothing to do with my selection. 36, 24, 36. Only if she's 5'3". To the beanpole dames in the magazines, you ain't it, Miss Thing. Give me a sister, I can't resist her. Red beans and rice didn't miss her. Some knucklehead tried to diss, cause his girls are on my list. He had game, but he chose to hit him, and I pull up quick to get with him. So ladies, if the butt is round, and you want a triple X throwdown, dial 1-900-MIX-A-LOT and kick them nasty thoughts. Baby got back.
Your mom is so fat, when she goes in a restaurant, she looks at the menu and says, okay.
Say, have you seen Mount Nellie, that Ozark hillbilly fat gal from Arkansas? She weighs 569 pounds. Takes 10 men to hug her and a boxcar to lug her. My God, is she fat. Mount Nellie, that Ozark hillbilly fat gal from Arkansas, visit.
My roommate's cat is fat. Actually, fat might not be the right word for her. Obese is a bit better term, conveying the degree to which she has expanded. But it might be most appropriate just to go ahead and call her morbidly obese, a phrase usually thrown around as a derisive cacophonism, but in this case, perhaps accurate, maybe even clinically so. Full disclosure, I've never been a cat person before, having grown up with dogs, so I don't know what a cat is supposed to look like. Even more disclosure, I couldn't pretend that I know what a dog is supposed to look like either. All the dogs my family had growing up ended up being fat themselves before very long. And I never noticed it until my parents put the dog on a diet, as they always did, and told us to stop feeding the dog all the time. The only time I remember being really aware of the dog being fat was with our last dog, a Doberman named Hannah. I remember she had a belly, and my parents kept trying unsuccessful diets with her, but it didn't hit me viscerally how fat she was until I came home one day and she ran across the yard to me, and I suddenly realized that the clippity-clop sound I'd been hearing whenever she ran was actually that of her fat rolls clapping together. Take a moment to let that sink in. So my gauge for judging the fatitude in animals is a little off, and I might never have realized by myself how obese our cat actually is if everyone I know didn't take such great pains to point it out at every opportunity. Without fail, every time someone comes to the apartment and is met by our cat, whose name is Katner, they launch into some apoplectic exclamation about how enormously fat she is, as if they've been suddenly struck by some revelation that shocked them to the very core of their being. It's really something to behold, because it always but always happens, and the production is so ridiculously dramatized. I'm starting to think that people rehearse their reactions to seeing her, because they seem to get more intense and stylized each successive time, even beyond the 5th and 6th performance. Some have even begun adding, "Has she gotten fatter?" Someone actually said this at a point when my roommate and I thought she was losing weight, something surprisingly difficult to evaluate. As for me, I find the performances pretty trite. I was taken aback when someone first said she was fat, because I genuinely didn't realize it. But after that first time, I became mildly annoyed by the comment. Yes, the cat is fat, and apart from health concerns, I don't have any problem with it. It seems that the people who keep repeating how fat she is seem to really be saying something else. But what that is, I don't have the sociolinguistic acumen to decipher. So people can keep calling the cat fat as far as I'm concerned. Whatever they're really getting at doesn't bother me, but the trite way they're trying to express it does annoy me a bit. My roommate, on the other hand, seems to get deeply offended when people call the cat fat, and sometimes will engage in fits of denial of her obesity.
I think his reaction is a multi-stage process, like the grieving process after bereavement. The first stage seems to be denial.
She's not fat!
Then comes anger.
How dare they say the cat is fat!
And lastly, acceptance.
Yes, she's fat.
Then, of course, the diets begin. Or rather, an amping up or redesign of her current diet. After special cat foods, consultations with veterinarians, and a meeting with a published cat expert, she's now on a diet of mostly raw meat, which my roommate prepares weekly, that she's given twice a day with no more allowed, except for special occasions. She got a turducken cat food for Thanksgiving, but mostly it's a strict diet. I don't know why my roommate reacts so strongly when people declare the cat fat. Maybe he gets the subtext that I'm missing. More likely, his own issues on the topic of fat are informing his reaction. I suppose it could be the idea that if the cat's fat, then we must look or be fat too. Because don't fat people raise fat pets? If pets start to look like their owners, does a fat cat mean that its owners are a lot fatter than they might realize? This thought actually troubles me sometimes, but I'm pretty sure I'm not fat to the degree my cat is. I think. While skinny pets are nice, I think it's kind of cool to have a fat cat. My thought is that if a pet is fat, then it means that the pet is really loved because its owners give it treats all the time. Well, that's my take on it. I can kind of see why other people might view it differently. I do, however, love the cat to death, fat or no. I want her to lose weight for health reasons, but her size is no issue for me. Now, if I could only feel the same way about people, then I'm sure I'd never want for a date again.
And what it means to the young women who identify themselves with it is difficult, if not completely impossible, to pin down. Among the most common explanations is that it simply means that they refuse treatment for their eating disorder. What is problematic about this definition is that most anorectics resist recovery, pro-ana or not. Young women with eating disorders almost always lie to their friends, families, and therapists about their behaviors and are willing to go to great lengths to avoid eating without arousing suspicion, just as sufferers from these diseases always have since the first documented cases of anorexia and bulimia. This attitude alone is not enough to differentiate anorexia from pro-ana. Resisting recovery, however, may be one of the few sentiments shared by the pro-anorexic community as a whole. Beyond this, a great disparity exists in their conceptions of what exactly it means to be pro-ana. Some insist that their eating disorders are lifestyles or conscious choices. Others may admit that their ED is a disease, but either refuse treatment or insist that they can stop before it goes too far. Many pro-anorexics are happy to teach others who are interested in developing eating disorders how to do so. Others refuse. Some acknowledge that their weight loss goals are dangerous, but many cannot see this or simply do not care. Pro-ana websites were first developed to counter the many support websites which encourage recovery from anorexia. Many anorexics believe that the desire to achieve an unnaturally slim figure was not mental illness, but an alternative lifestyle. Doctors who treat anorexia see pro-ana as a life-threatening danger to current and potential anorexics. A common assumption is that these sites are actively trying to recruit new anorexics, but this is almost never the case. Some pro-ana websites are fairly exclusive. Others always welcome new members into the fold, whether they wish for support in recovery or illness. Yet others do not accept anorexics who wish to recover. These sites often include tips on how to stay anorexic or be a better anorexic, but rare is the site that directly encourages healthy people to become anorexic. Recently, pro-ana has acquired a political dimension, especially in the United States, where participants present themselves as a walking protest against consumer culture. Pro-anorexia websites can offer genuine advice, such as admonishing readers to avoid the use of syrup of Ipecac to induce vomiting. They can also be a place for the anorexic to talk to people like him or herself, and possibly improve self-esteem over the choice to remain anorexic. Less friendly pro-ana sites vigorously castigate and mock those who decide to seek treatment for anorexia, However, most are not anti-recovery, and an anorexic who wishes to recover can find support for his or her choice through this network.
And now, Ed Shed presents Scenes from a Life.
Up until I turned 28, I could never be considered fat, or overweight, or even doughy. However, while I was never fat, I was never exactly skinny either. Well, not skinny in the good way. I had skinny arms and great legs, but I never had the six-pack look on my stomach. I never even felt like my stomach was flat. And since as far back as I can remember, all I ever wanted was to be sexy, I tried hard to get that nice stomach, especially back in college. One thing I absolutely loved at Florida State was its recreation center. It was stocked with all the best exercise equipment you could ask for, and even better, with all the gorgeous bodies you could ever want to ogle. I loved going, and after I got into the habit of going, I felt completely addicted to exercising. It was common for me to go to the gym every day and spend 2 hours or more there, starting with around 40 minutes on the Stairmaster at the top level, then doing the weight machines, then more Stairmaster. As I exercised more, I looked for other ways to enhance my program. I took an ephedrine caffeine aspirin stack for a while, and after I lingered over the diet book The Zone for a while, which was relatively new back then, I started taking fish oil, drinking a glass of red wine a few times a week, and then finally decided to go low carb, or rather 40-30-30, as I thought of it back then. The summer of 96 was when I really got into it. I can vividly recall what I ate. Breakfast consisted of half a pumpernickel bagel with peanut butter, cottage cheese, and cinnamon, with cottage cheese mixed with all bran extra fiber on the side. On special days, I added fake scrambled eggs that I made from tofu, Molly McButter, and salt and pepper. Lunch and dinner were either tuna and vegetables or my favorite, salsa mixed with black beans and soy meat. I ate lots of soy, not because I've ever been a vegetarian, but because I'm terribly afraid of eating spoiled meat and don't want to have to think too much when cooking. The rest of what I ate consisted of diet soda, one piece of candy from the Hoggly Woggly I passed every morning, and every now and then a big plate of lo mein, which I only ate because a friend of mine gave it to me free at the mall I frequented. And I was poor, so I ate it. I stuck to my diet religiously when I could, and was very pleased with the results. I did run into temptations when I worked at Subway sandwiches, however, the danger being that I adored the cookie dough but couldn't eat it. I got around this concern by simply chewing the dough and then spitting it out, something I didn't realize was only a couple of steps away from an actual eating disorder. By the end of the summer and into the fall semester, I was happy with my body, but still was working toward that ever-elusive six-pack, to say nothing of the ever-elusive pecs and biceps. But about this time, I started to get some unusual comments. I'd run into people at the mall who would remark,
"You're losing weight."
"Yeah, I know, isn't it great?"
I'd respond,
"You mean you want to look like that?"
"Of course, who wouldn't want to be thin?"
And my friend who gave me the Chinese food started to tell me that I was far too thin and that I looked like a skull. I discounted all of them, concluding that they were simply jealous, and I continued my diet and exercise regimen. That December, I had my friend Mark take some pictures of me to use on Christmas cards that I never ended up making. When the pictures came back, I noticed firstly that none of the pictures were really very good. But then I noticed that I indeed looked startlingly thin. My cheeks were sunken in, and my other features jutted out in sharp relief. It dawned on me that I really was too thin. After that, I relaxed my diet a little, and since in the new year I had no access to the school gym as I graduated, I ended up putting on some weight, and of course people commented that I looked much better, that I looked healthy again. I've never been back to that extreme level of thinness since. Looking back, I can't completely account for exactly how I got so skinny. There were mitigating factors beyond just diet and exercise. Let's just say Lindsay Lohan would be proud. But I have to admit, even though I got unhealthily thin, I'm secretly a little proud of that and wish I had whatever it took back then to do it again now. Not that I would take it that far, but it would be nice to know that I could. I guess there's a little of the pro-Anna. Today, there's no danger of me becoming way too thin. But luckily, I'm not pudgy like I was for a little while in the past couple years. I'm still trying to find a balance both in the foods I consume and how I think about fat, to say nothing about the complicated issues of sexiness and age. Ideally, I'd just like to be at the point where fat doesn't matter. But deep down, I know I'd rather just be sexy and fat-free. I guess some things never change.
Your mama's so fat she has to iron her pants on the driveway.
This is a song that I'm a rap about. It's called That I'm Sorry That I Got Fat, I Will Slim Down. This is the song that is reminding me that I'm fixing to lose weight and go on a strict diet. The first time when I got fat, I was eating those fatty hamburgers, fries, and all that. That's what I'm gonna do something about it right now. And this is the song that I just wrote about. I'm sorry that I was slim down. I was slim down. I'm sorry that I got fat. I was slim down.
Spending on the scale. Four numbers and I start to cry. I didn't mean to eat that much.
Never meant to be so fat.
Yeah!
Never meant to be so fat. Never meant to be so
fat.
I've been heavy all my life ever since I was a little kid. So I turned 40 and I said, I have to do something. I have to do something. I have to do something.
That something was surgery. You're for morbid obesity, and it's not. And it's not. And it's not. And it's not. It's been 5 weeks now, and Maureen Bear is feeling pretty good about her decision to have the surgery. She's lost 35 pounds, and she has fewer aches and pains in her joints. But she still thinks about food. She thinks about food a lot.
All you can eat.
Let's listen to this piece I recorded a few years ago called Pizza.
Pizza.
All you can eat pizza. Pizza pizzazz like jazz. Snazz razzmatazz zazz.
I like dessert.
I like dessert pizza. Chorus of
Melch in your mouth. Like celestial pancake syrup.
Like heaven grown motor oil dripping deep,
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 deep. Into your carbohydrator pleasure sensors.
It's like a tidal wave of liquid sunshine.
It's like a million
blocks of
liquid sunshine.
It's like 60 degrees of blanket of
infectious
light.
It's like
a
Christmas light.
It's like a
pizza, 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 pizza. It's a Las Vegas extravaganza for the Walmart
Pizza was inspired by a real all-you-can-eat pizza place called Cece's Pizza, but I always called it Mama Cece's for some reason. The first time I went to Cece's was back in Tallahassee, but I didn't go very often there. It wasn't until I moved to Atlanta that I went to Cece's with any frequency. Not that I went very often, I didn't. It was actually a special occasion for me. I would probably go once every couple months and engorge myself on pizza and then feel terribly guilty about it and resolve to exercise a lot more to make up for it. But then I never really amped up the exercise all that much. Eh, whatever. If you've never been to Cece's, you're missing a sight. Virtually everyone in the restaurant at any given time is violently obese. Very, very obese. In fact, there are whole families where each member is obese. But then what would you expect from an all-you-can-eat pizza restaurant? Especially one where the price is very, very cheap. I think it was around $2.99 when I went there. And that says a lot. It sort of predetermines that the clientele is either going to be all college students or people of rather low social status. And in the Cece's in Atlanta, there weren't any college students to be found. And the neighborhood left a little to be desired. Even in Tallahassee, the Cece's wasn't in a very collegiate part of town. It was actually in the same shopping center as a Walmart. The food at Cece's was actually pretty gross, but I liked it. I can be a cockroach with fast food. I just like some of it, like Taco Bell. And I used to love the fact that I could get taco pizza and dessert pizza and all other kinds of pizza at Cece's. I used to eat until I felt like I was going to burst, the whole time passing judgment on all the fatties there. I think going there might have been in a small way a self-esteem boost for me. I mean, how can you feel fat at 160 pounds when you're surrounded by people who weigh 300 and up? And even some of the children outweighed me. Cece's, however, was not the first all-you-can-eat pizza place I've been to. In Tallahassee, there was one called Godfather's Pizza that had a buffet, and I would eat there occasionally. I loved it, too. One time, I went to the buffet with my friend Cohen, and when we finished, I was talking about how full I felt. This was the summer that I was working out like crazy, so I wondered aloud whether I should just throw up all the pizza I'd eat. Cohen revealed to me, in slightly hushed tones, that he'd done that once before when he'd eaten too much, and that it really wasn't that difficult. I briefly considered it, but never followed through. I remember telling my friend Mark later what Cohen had said, and Mark responding, I don't think he wanted you to tell people about that. And I realized Mark was right. I guess I just assumed that everyone had thought about bulimia at some point, and that it wasn't all that big a deal if someone went through with it a couple times. Of course, I was also kind of a dim bulb socially back then, much like today, so that would explain the faux pas. If you live in Manhattan, you're aware that there aren't any all-you-can-eat pizza joints here.
All you can eat.
All you can eat, I'm told, unless it refers to Indian buffets, is more of a Long Island kind of thing. And thank goodness, because if I had access to a Cece's up here, I'd probably look like all those other patrons down in Atlanta. A sobering and frightening thought.
All you can eat.
Your mama's so fat she puts her lipstick on with a paint roller.
Your mama's so fat she has to pull down her pants to get in her pocket.
Yeah, y'all gonna love me for this one. Yeah.
You can catch me in the club with an obese girl. When I ride, I'm gonna ride with an obese girl.
Big fat lady's eating babies.
She's an obese girl.
They stay licking on some chicken. Jelly showing, belly's growing.
The obese girl.
Need weight loss pills.
Your mama's so fat, you have to take a train and two buses just to get on her good side.
Damn, she's a fat chick.
So fat.
She really needs a diet.
So bad.
She's looking kind of pregnant.
So fat.
With about 10 kids.
So bad.
Damn, she's a fat chick.
So fat.
She really needs a diet.
So bad.
She's looking kind of pregnant.
So fast.
With about 10 kids.
So fast.
So I'm chilling at a club just feeling the beat. Until I see a chick with about size 12 feet. And she's dancing wild and she's killing the place. Now I'm so damn scared she's gonna start up a quake. Man, she's a fat chick licking her lips. And I'm getting kind of sick just because of her hips. With about 10 kids.
So bad.
Your mama's so fat she has to wake up in sections.
I know one that's very stinky. I'll tell you about her.
Buzz, because they know that inside that fat guy, there's a cute guy in there. And as long as they don't know that, it's all right. And it's unfair. Because when a man gets big, we're not fat, we're big. Hey, man, you know. And I'll rush you a tape. Not a videotape. I will send you duct tape. So you can duct tape your pie hole. You can duct tape your big hocico so you can stop eating, you big fat marrano. Send for it today.
Your mama's so fat she sat on a quarter and a booger popped out of George Washington's nose.
Krispy Kreme in my pants. Nothing warms my heart than a box of the frosted rounds. The whole wide world is a world of white corpses. People popping boxes. We all want donuts, lonely, fat.
Okay, really quickly, I can't believe I didn't mention this before. Back in college at B15, we knew quite a few fat people. And one time, we had about four of them over hanging out at B15, and then we decided to go to a coffee shop across town called Epitome. One of the fat people was one was some girl that was really annoying, one of the giggly ones. There were two big fat people that were dating each other, and there was this one guy who said that before he got on Paxil, he slept 23 hours a day, and the 1 hour a day he was awake, he was a monster bitch. Anyway, so we went to this coffee shop across town, but we had to take two cars. So I took Michael Collins and a couple other people, but all the fat people piled into their own car, and they drove ahead of us. So they turned on this road that's very curvy, and it's where the recreation center and all that stuff is. And there are these big speed bumps. They're not like the quick ones. They're very long, so you really have to slow down. Anyway, their car was they turned onto this road. As their car went over the speed bumps, it was weighed down so much that sparks were flying out behind the car every time they went over a speed bump. And we were just in stitches. We thought it was the funniest thing ever, and we called it the Fat Car. And that's it.
Here's the skinny on the French. When it comes to the French and their diet, it's important to notice their attitude towards food. They view eating as a pleasurable experience to be savored, rather than as a guilt-causing rendezvous. Here in America, not only do we tend to obsess over our food choices, but we also tend to eat too quickly, without taking the time to truly enjoy what we're eating. And then, since we don't take the time to enjoy, we aren't satisfied and want more. This means that not only do we feel guilty for eating certain foods, but since we feel bad about eating them, we end up consuming even more. The French, on the other hand, enjoy and savor the eating experience, allowing them to eat in moderate portions and stay satisfied. Remember, no food itself is fattening. Remember, it's the amount of food that makes it fattening. The trick then is to learn to eat more slowly and to enjoy each bite. You will then be more likely to eat smaller portions, save calories, and yet still stay satisfied.
I saw her tonight. Lady, I love them rolls. Not talking about Tootsie Rolls. Kind like you like to eat.
This has been the Ed Shep Radio Experiment. Thank you for listening and tune in next week. This is Ed Shep signing off.
You're listening to WFMU East Orange, WXHD Mount Hope, and WFMU.org.